Welcome to the Midlife Midsters Podcast, your podcast for inspiration on being bold and saying yes to making the most of midlife.
I'm Marianne, and I've had the pleasure of meeting you before.
Yes.
You guys haven't, but this is Suzanne.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hello. It's great to be here with you.
Thanks for coming. I'm Carmen.
And Leslie Ann.
I'm Marla. Leslie Ann and I were out on the Chesapeake Bay coming up with the third season, and the topics that we wanted to touch upon or to go in depth upon. And Marla just told the story how she heard about you, and you were in Arlington Magazine and you were featured there because you did something very special. So we want to hear a little bit about what took you there and your takeaways. So start wherever you want, but I think we'll find it inspiring for ourselves and the listeners too.
So when you're saying what I did is I took an adult gap year. I was 25 years in the corporate world. I had everything that I had worked for. And from the outside looking in, I was kind of that objective picture of success. I was a partner at a global management consulting firm. I had, you know, the big house, the cars. We took the Instagram-worthy vacations. And yet on the inside, I was miserable. And I was really coming to reckon with the fact that I had been miserable and dissatisfied, kind of disengaged from my career for a number of years, probably eight, where that little voice of intuition every now and again would bubble up and say, is this it? Am I really supposed to be doing this? And like the good girl who had worked really hard, I just pushed that feeling down into its box and ignored it. And then one day, and it was during COVID, it was the day that the announcement came out that my kids wouldn't be going back to school like every other kid in the world. And that little voice just screamed at the top of her lungs, you can do better and you have to do something better. And I went for a walk and this idea sort of planted in my head like it was an out-of-body experience that said, you don't have to stay here. Why don't you move to another country? And so we moved to Mexico.
Had you been to Mexico before or that part?
Yeah, I've been to like American Mexico, like Cancun, Cabo. I had never been to indigenous Mexico. We moved to Oaxaca City, which is very far south in Mexico. It's a city in the overall metropolitan area, probably has about 150,000 people. And I'd never been there before, but I took one look on Google and I was like, that's it. That's where we're going.
How adventurous.
So when you had this inspiration to go to another country, was like Mexico part of that inspiration or did that come later?
So we had dreams of grandeur, if I want to be completely honest, for 24 hours of we'll go to the south of France. Because I went home. I was on a walk, as I mentioned. I went back to the little cabin we were staying at. We were in North Carolina and our kids were at a summer camp that happened to be open during COVID. And I said to my husband, like, I have an idea and it's crazy, but why don't we move? And he looked at me and it was probably a few seconds, but it felt like hours. And I was like, never mind this stupid idea. And he's like, no, we're doing it. So for about 12 hours, we were like, we'll go to the south of France. We'll go to Italy. We have a friend in Mallorca. And then we looked at it and we said, wait a second, it is July of 2020 and no one will have us. So when we really looked at it, we could literally go to Kazakhstan. We could go to an island in the Caribbean and Mexico was available. And we kind of looked and said, well, if we get stuck, we can drive to the border and they can't deny us entry to the country. So there were some practical pieces of it, but it was also time zone for our kids to zoom into school, for my husband to remote work, and to practice Spanish. They were all really big factors that weighed in as we kind of looked at it.
Did you quit your job or did you just work remotely for a while?
I took a sabbatical. So I knew that whole notion of not being happy, I knew I had to figure out a different way. I knew that I couldn't do it while staying in the situation I was in. So it was not just go there and work. It was go there and really think about and figure out, who did I want to be on the other side of this gap year?
So on the front end of that decision, when you were deciding to go to Mexico, were you intentional about, like, this is the place I'm going to reset, I'm going to really think what I want to do, where my future wants to go? Or was it COVID, let's do an adventure, let's take the whole family out? Was it separate, or they just kind of came together for you?
A little bit coming together. And if I can back up of just how burnt out I had been, and honestly, I didn't even know I was burnt out. It took me several months in Mexico to go, oh my gosh, you know what? I'm burnt out. Like, this was like some revelation that occurred to me. When I look back, I had had bouts of what I call acute burnout going back probably to 2009, 2010. Definitely in 2014, I started having suicidal ideation, and it was something that I didn't tell anyone about. I didn't tell my husband. I didn't tell my friends. I certainly didn't tell my coworkers, because when the suicidal ideation started, I was actually going through the partner admission process, and I was so close to that goal that I had been working for so many years that saying to someone at the firm, this is happening, to me seemed like they would come and say, like, well, you're just not cut out for this. And so aside from a therapist, I didn't tell anybody. And these bouts would come and go through the years. And I think I just lived in this survival mode, that it became such the state of just who I was and how I worked, that when I finally listened to that voice, I felt like my knees had been taken out from under me and I had no other choice. So it wasn't, I don't know if I had some sort of like grand plan that I had been thinking of. It was just really the universe came down and said, like, you need to get your stuff together and you don't know what you're doing and you got to go figure it out. So I really didn't have.
Right.
I didn't have a plan.
So my heart is pounding because I went through something similar. I was a senior executive in a couple of different firms, and I went through similar things like extreme sleeplessness, terrible anxiety, horrible migraines. I wouldn't call it suicidal ideation, but I went through periods where I would be like, maybe I'll just get sick and die because it was so horrible. Like, and I, and it wasn't until I actually got sick after I quit. Because I was my body was screaming at me for years. Like, it was like migraines and sleeplessness and all this sort of stuff. And I just didn't pay any attention. So when I finally stopped, I actually got like autoimmune problems and all of these other things. And I sometimes wonder, like, why did I put up with that for so long? Do you think about that sometimes?
You know, I think there's part of me that goes back and says, like, why? But I mean, if I look back, and I don't even think I was fully aware of it. I just thought it was normal. Like waking up in the middle of the night in a panic every night with like, oh my God, what did I forget to do?
I'm being on edge
and
all the time.
Constantly on edge, screaming at my family, but trying to be as nice as I could be to my clients and my colleagues. That was just normal. And that was like that revelation a couple of months into my gap year, where I went to my husband one day and I'm like, guess what? I'm burnt out. And he was like, no duh. And I was like, no, this is a good thing because I'm not a miserable person. I can change being burnt out. Like, if I'm just a curmudgeon, you guys are stuck with me, and that really stinks.
Suzanne, can we stay on the burnout for a minute?
Yeah.
Because I know you've done some research, and I know you and I have spoken about it. I didn't know until speaking to you, you informed me and educated me on the different levels of burnout. For our listeners, can you kind of like go through the warning signs and exactly those three levels of burnout?
Yeah, so there's, if you think about it, and this is through research that's done by Nick Peretti out of New Zealand. And he really does a lot about burnout and resiliency. And when I started listening and getting into what Nick was talking about, I was like, oh my God, it's so clear. But if you think about burns, like different alarms or different, like a first degree burn, a second degree burn, a third degree burn. That first degree burn is like that stress and overwhelm that's for a period of time and we can come out of. And that's the thing where when you're doing sort of self-care, it really works when you get in there and nip it in the bud and you take some time off or you do some meditation, you change some of those immediate behaviors because you can address it. It's not a really deep burn. The second degree burn is when you get into that survival mode and you are just, it's the way of life. And what the problem is what we generally do is we try to apply the solutions from a first degree burn to a second degree burn. But if you are in a complete survival mode, like we're discussing here, that idea of taking a weekend or a couple of days off, it doesn't really solve the problem. And you end up going back into the same behaviors because you're not changing your relationship with burnout. The third degree burn is really when your health is suffering, your mental health is suffering, in addition to your physical well-being, you are really cut down to the knees. And in most cases, that takes stepping away from your situation because you can't function on a daily basis. And that's when you really have to learn to look inside, figure out what really matters to you, and change your relationship with how you're going to be in those stressful situations so that you can come out the other side. Otherwise, it's just this like nasty cycle of kind of coming back up for air and then sinking down.
When did you, so it sounds like you were already in Mexico a couple months before you kind of started thinking, yes, I'm burnt out, and you told your husband that. How can you tell us a little bit about that process and what you put in place at that point to help heal yourself?
Yeah, of course. So the first, I would say the first month, I couldn't do anything. It was really weird. One of our first days there, my husband walked out and he's like, so what are you going to do on this adult gap year? And I burst into tears because like for the first time in my life, I didn't have a plan. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I just sat and I cried. And I really had to be extremely uncomfortable with not doing, because every time I started trying to do something, I was distracted. I didn't know. And there's a lot when you move to a new country, like just figuring out how to get water delivered to the house, like that took a lot. And I didn't speak Spanish. So there was a whole host of challenges. So there was a piece of that. And it was really interesting because I was talking to a friend one day and she was like, you know, Suzanne, it's very much like you are a pressure cooker. And just because they took you off the heat, you need to wait for that pressure to release and you don't have the quick release valve to let it out quickly. Like you were just going to have to sit and let this kind of calm down in you. So I started by walking. Like I really started by doing like a moving meditation because I was not good at that point of doing a totally still meditation. And I started walking and I found that when I was doing that, I was more present because I had to be. Like going to the market and trying to listen to the difference between 60 and 60 for 60 and 70, I was like, what? And I would just hold out money because I had no idea what they were saying to me. But being in an unfamiliar environment forced me to be more present. And when I started getting more present to things that were happening around me, it was a lot easier to be present to what was going on inside of me.
I love that. And I'm just curious because like, I'm just wondering like the break in being in a different place in a different culture, it not only would create a situation where you can be more present, but it also does represent a serious break from your past. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that? Like I'm kind of like being a new me.
It's so interesting, Leslie, and because I think that it wasn't necessarily a new me. It was just I'm being me, and I didn't know who I was for so long. I was all of these roles, right? I was a compliance expert. I was a partner. I led our East Coast forensic practice across like 200 people. I did all of these things, and I was tied up in that. But like, who was Suzanne, and what did she like to do? I couldn't tell you. I was like, I don't know. I guess if I had free time, I'd go to Target. Or, you know, I'd do something for my kids, but what did I like to do? So I got to explore those pieces of myself that I just like left dormant for so long.
Suzanne, I'm laughing because I remember when I quit and I was like, I'm going to do some things I like to do. And I went to the nail salon. I got my nails done a couple times and I was like, I hate this.
Yeah.
I'm never coming back. I was like, I hate having my nails done.
I think the other thing that was really interesting is because I didn't know anyone there. There were no Joneses to keep up with. There was nobody judging me. And if they were judging me, they were judging me for like legitimate things. Like the gringa has no idea what she's doing. And I was like fully embraced it. Like, no, I don't know what I'm doing. But that idea of like being able to live outside of expectations and just let go of some of them and the expectations that I had placed on myself for so long, that was another piece that was so freeing in figuring out where did I want to go.
So you were able to connect with yourself.
Absolutely.
Which is incredible.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. I mean, a lot, like a break is a break, right? A gap year for whatever reason, whether it's a career change or in my case, a divorce and figuring out who you are, those pieces. And you said it earlier about having an out-of-body experience. And, you know, our theme is boldly saying yes, right? But boldly, it's hard to quit a career of 25 years or what you were talking about, Carmen, or get a divorce. And I guess what I wanted to tease out a little bit more was sort of what gave you that inner strength to be able to do what you did and to bring your family along, right? I mean, this was, and I don't know how old your children were at that time, but it was a family.
We
are not a just a you thing.
Yeah, it was. I mean, my twins were 14 at the time. My youngest was 8, and my husband came and we took the dog. Yeah, you know, so I mean, it was the whole kit and caboodle went. I don't know, like because people would say to me early on, as I was telling them that I was going to do this, they're like, "You are so brave," and inside I was like, "Oh, I'm terrified." Like this doesn't feel brave. This doesn't feel courageous. This feels, is somewhat crazy. And I think I knew in my heart that I needed to do something different. And this, in COVID, for all of its terribleness, kind of gave this opening, I think, for a lot of people to reassess what really mattered to them. And that was part of it, was saying, you have always said your family is paramount, and you have said that your value is authenticity and making a difference, and you are not being authentic at all, and you are not valuing your family. You're treating them like a doormat 9 times out of 10. And I didn't want that. I didn't, like, when I really looked and thought to myself of like, what do I want out of this life? It wasn't to treat them like a doormat. It wasn't to make them optional because I was picking them most of the time second and I was prioritizing my work and what people were asking me to do. So I don't know if that answers the question, but I think there was just something deep inside of me that knew that something was off.
You gave yourself a permission slip, which I think is great, to do what you needed to do for yourself.
I think that's a great way to look at it, is like it just to think differently of if not now, when?
Right.
Do you think you would have gotten there if it hadn't been for the pandemic? Because the pandemic played a part because, as you said, the kids were free to go somewhere else.
Right. I didn't have to homeschool them.
Right.
that would have been a disaster for everybody.
Yeah. Different kind of stress. So I'm just curious, do you think, knowing now what you know about where you were and the level of burnout that you have, do you think you would have gotten there? Or do you think that the fact that life was interrupted anyway allowed you to push even further past that boundary?
I think it allowed me to get there quicker. I do think that I would have gotten there. You know, if you look at the scales of kind of leadership and vertical leadership and how you move across leadership and transcend by creating new networks and expanding your skills, I had really moved beyond just achievement. And I was in a world that was valuing achievement. And that was the motivator and the marker. And I knew that that wasn't my motivator anymore. If, you know, I think it had been at some point, but that idea of just accumulating more was not in my vernacular at this particular time. And so I think I would have realized that my values were out of alignment and what my motivators were out of alignment. I think it would have been harder and it would have taken me longer.
Can we turn to that whole journey is a big deal. I'd love to hear what, I mean, I know a little bit about what you've been doing since 2020, but I'd love to hear what you moved towards once you had this sabbatical.
Yeah. And so I think that also goes back, you know, to Marla, what you were saying about what gave you the resolve. And this will get to a little bit what I'm doing. I'm now a leadership and executive coach for people who are in that phase of transition and trying to figure out what's next, what really matters to them. They have that little voice inside them as well, and they're just pushing past it. And they're like, okay, how do I really spend this kind of second part of my life and career doing something that's really meaningful and valuable to me? And part of it is having something to run towards. I think that one of the really interesting things is that when I took a sabbatical, I ultimately came back and went back to the firm. But as I was coming back into the firm, I started getting my coaching certification. I realized I loved coaching more than most days. I loved some of the problems my clients were bringing to me. And that's when I realized, like, this isn't fair. It's not fair to my teams, to my clients, to my partners to stay when I'm not passionate about what I'm doing. And I know I'm not. I'm not just like kind of walking through the motions. But running towards something versus running away from something is a huge differentiator. And I think that as people kind of go through that transition, it's finding what you want to run towards that makes it so much easier to make the leap.
What's interesting about that is that that's where you got to, but actually in the beginning, it didn't work out that way because you were thinking of going to like France or Italy or someplace really, and Mexico was all that you had. So you weren't really running towards Mexico. It's just like Mexico was just available, but you were able to take that opportunity and make the absolute best of it. And I guess the reason I point that out is I think often we think about making some kind of dramatic change. I think the burnout thing is really real for a lot of women. Mm-hmm. And I think we think of making that dramatic change, but we look and we can't get things to line up just the way we want so that we can get out of what we're doing.
Right.
Because we're focusing too much on where we want to go. You had to actually just go and then let the rest fall into place for you.
Yeah. And
is that fair?
I think it is fair. And I think that there is, you know, especially if you think about wanting to line up the plan, wanting to have all of the I's dotted and the T's crossed and knowing what you're getting yourself into. I think a lot of people don't take a leap because it is too daunting. It's too big. And there are practical reasons. Like, look, I am not going to not acknowledge that there was a definite privilege that I had to be able to make this move. Mm-hmm. And not everybody gets that. I don't necessarily know that the destination had anything to do with it. Like, it could have been France. It could have been Italy. It could have probably been in Idaho. But it was in Mexico. There's a big piece of me that says, even if we had stayed, if I had just taken the time to slow down and figure out what I wanted to do and what was really important to me and start letting go of the expectations, really doing the work, that I could have gotten there as well. And that's what I really work with people now is it's not about necessarily going to a foreign location. Although if people want to do it, I am like all in and supportive and I will like give you all the lessons that I learned and the mistakes I made. but I don't think that you have to completely uproot and move to a different physical location, but you do need to do the work. You need to set aside the time and figure out what really matters and who do you want to be and what's the impact you want to make going forward.
So I have a question for you that is a little bit generational, because my mother actually had a career, but among her generation, that was pretty unusual. And then I look at my daughter and her cohort's attitude about work and family is very different. I feel like we were a little bit the first generation who tried to have it all. And by about 45, we basically collapsed on the side of the road because it was like, you really can't do it all at the same time. How do you think about that? And then how do you talk about that with your kids? Because I do have conversations with both of my children about that, but I think it's an interesting privilege to have been part of the first generation who could make it to partner in senior executive management. And yet it is an incredibly difficult thing to do while also having a family, or even without having a family, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree with you that it is very, very hard. And I don't want to sound so jaded, but I think we were sold this bill of goods.
And also think we were sold a little bit of a bill of goods that it was a meritocracy, because in reality, most of my peers, I don't know about yours, but most of my peers were men who had stay-at-home wives. And so they had support systems that we didn't have.
There was one day I remember I was sitting there and I was like, I need to leave. I need to go get the laundry from the dry cleaners. And a male partner looked at me and was like, what do you mean? And I'm like, you know, all the stuff that magically gets done at your house?
It's your wife.
Your wife does it. And I don't have a wife. I would love a wife. Mm-hmm. I was always arguing that I needed one. But the question on how do I talk to my daughters, because I do have two. I mean, it's this different way of looking at things now. I always thought before that if I worked really hard and I got to the top and I had the title, that would be showing them what it took to be a strong, powerful, capable female leader. And after we got back and I had left the firm and I was walking with my oldest daughter at the time, she looked at me and she said, you know, Mom, I'm so proud of you because you're following your dreams. And I think that's just like, it's a different pathway that I'm so proud that I'm now able to show them of, you can really do anything you want. And you don't have to follow the path that somebody gives you when you're 18 or 21 in college and you get on the moving sidewalk because somebody says, you know, accounting and management consulting is a great career. And I was like, okay, off I go. And never to step off to the side one way or the other.
So what took you, it sounds like listening from the beginning to the end, a mental health aspect kind of put you to a point or to a place where you knew you needed change. Did you expect to have this personal growth come out? I mean, your career growth, and it sounds like the goals that you're met were so high, but now you're like meeting all these personal goals for yourself and such an example to your children. How does that feel? And do you feel like you're still on that path?
Old habits die hard.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I learned, and Marianne, you and I talked about this a little, is this notion of when you are a high charging striver, the thing that we often do, especially when that anxiety bubbles up or you start to feel that like, oh, is this all I'm supposed to be doing? Is this really it? Is we get into action because action feels comfortable and it's what we're good at. But in actuality, action masks our anxiety and discomfort. And that's a hard thing to let go of because I like to-do lists and I like checking things off and I like making progress. But I am much better now at realizing when I start to feel overwhelmed, when I'm waking up in the middle of the night, I'm like, something has gone askew. What am I trying to do or overdo? Am I doing things that's outside of my value system? Am I making decisions that are based upon someone else's expectations or some unreasonable expectation I have of myself? Have I lost sight of what my real definition of success is now? So I'm able to better kind of come back around to what really matters and get myself back on track in a much more efficient manner and not kind of cycle back down to the depths of kind of that burnout that I felt before.
You had something in the book that I really resonated with me. And I think it's kind of part of what you're talking about now, but you did like an energy assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really cool. And maybe you could talk about that a little bit, because that seems to me something that people can do in place to sort of start the process of figuring out, is their value system in the right?
Yeah, absolutely. So the energy assessment is really kind of looking back at your day or a week and saying, like, here are the things that I did, big blocks of time. And did those activities, was I engaged in them? And did they replenish the battery or did they deplete the battery? And it's really just kind of like, I mean, you could think about it like a battery charge or a gas tank. Are you full? Or are you running on empty? And when I did that, when I laid it all out, that was when I realized like what I was spending the majority of my day doing were things that I wasn't overly engaged in. I was actually very good at it, but I wasn't overly engaged. And it was draining my energy every day. And I'm like, well, no wonder I've got nothing. And, you know, I love working hard. There was while we were in Mexico, I volunteered with a microfinance organization and I led a strategy session for the organization and women from the indigenous communities that they lent money to, of like what their needs were going to be coming out of COVID. I did it all in Spanish. It was incredible. And I came home like on cloud nine. And I think it was also kind of at the same time that I was doing this energy audit, because I was doing all of this stuff kind of in parallel. And I'm like, it's not the working hard. Mm-hmm. It is the, I'm doing things that are not recharging that battery. And that was really the kind of a thing, but anybody can do it. It's just, you know,
piece that was of paper so purposeful that you, what you did. So it had to have been hugely rewarding.
It was really, I mean, and that was the piece where I came in and I said to Bill, like, I'm not miserable. I'm just burnt out. Isn't that great?
It's kind of like Marie Kondoing your life. Like, is this bringing me joy?
Yes.
Or not?
Absolutely.
Maybe you need to jettison something if it's not working for you.
Yeah.
Do you go back to Mexico?
Yes. So we have.
Because Oaxaca is supposed to have some of the best food in the world.
Oh my God. It's so good. It's so, so good. So we do go back. We've been back a few times as a family. And one of the things that I really wanted to do when we were there is to take other people back. And so I just completed my first retreat with a group of women. We went down for a week and we really walked through the process of slowing down, disconnecting, getting in touch with yourself, and starting the process of figuring out what did they want that second turn of their life to start looking like. What were the things that they wanted to hold on to? And what were the things that they wanted to go to? So being able to bring people to Oaxaca with me and share the experience, share the food, have them meet some of the wonderful people that I got to interact with there was just fantastic. So we'll be doing it again next February, too.
I was going to say, when's the next retreat? In February, what are the dates?
It's February 15th through the 22nd of 25.
Very cool.
You had mentioned when I was talking earlier about it being a family, mm-hmm, gap year. Curious, you know, your daughter said how proud she was of you for following your dream. What have your children's takeaways been from the experience?
So it's really, really interesting. Emily, who, you know, she was 14 at the time, was like, I want to go home. Like at the very end, she was like, this gap year has gone on long enough. I miss my friends. I want to go home. And we got home and she started in the high school here and was like, came home within the first couple of days and said, I'm going to try to test into fluent Spanish because I just want to study outside of the U.S. And she is a fluent Spanish speaker. Actually, almost they all are. I think that the biggest thing that we did, and it was a gift that I am so happy that we were able to give them. We made their world bigger, and at the same time, we made it smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have connections, they have friends. They played on a basketball team when we've gone back. They've gone back to the basketball team. They talk to people in Oaxaca. My youngest daughter started horseback riding when she was there, and it is her passion. So they have just been changed in so many ways. And if I were to go home tonight and say, pack a bag, we're leaving in the morning, not a single one of them would say, no, we're not going. I mean, we all left a little bit of ourselves there.
Oh, how wonderful. Let me ask you, so you were gone for a year.
Just about.
Right. So for listeners, people that know they're burnt out, you talked a little bit about the signs and symptoms of that. And right now in the healthcare world, after COVID, I was one of those people too. Now it's been 2 years, but totally burnt out during COVID and had to step away from it. And I just knew. As far as for listeners that can't take a year, especially those, they're, like I said, the healthcare workers, by and large, there's so much burnout in that entire industry. What type of advice would you give them if they didn't have a year, but they had a weekend or a week or something that they could choose tomorrow to do that might make a difference for them?
So I would say, and like I said before, you don't need a gap year. You don't need to move somewhere else. You do need to make time and space. So the first thing I would say is, if someone thinks that I'm going to take a weekend and I'm going to solve all of my problems, imagine yourself as the pressure cooker. It's going to take longer than that for your pressure to release naturally. We don't have that quick release valve. But making time, whether it's an hour, a week, whether it's working with a coach or a therapist to figure out, what do you really value? Most people, when I work with them, haven't thought about their values at all.
Oh, interesting.
So kind of even connecting with yourself and saying, what are your top three values? And how do you live into them? How do you operationalize them? What do you want your life to look at? I work with clients and I have them write a eulogy for themselves of, what do you want people to say about you when you're 101? And how then do we say, well, what trajectory am I on today? Thinking about how you're making decisions right now, is it because of expectations that you're placing on yourself that are unreasonable? Or are you deciding things because others are expecting you to do them and you don't even care about them if you think deep down? I work with people to redefine what their definition of success is. And then experimenting, going back to, like, what do you like to do? You're not going to figure a lot of this stuff out sitting at a desk trying to logic yourself out of it. You actually have to get out into the wild and see, what do you like to do? So take a pottery class, join a pickleball group, start a different exercise routine, shake things up and try things new and see what feels good. And then you can actually start making intentional steps forward. But it does take a long time to kind of make a transition. The research shows that it can take anywhere from 6 months to 3 years to make that pivot. So it's not something that happens overnight, but if you are intentional and you put in the work, it can be done, and it can be done where you are. And some of the things, the benefits that come out of it, is you don't have to wait for 3 years to reap the rewards. You can start making little changes in your career as it stands today to inject some of that energy and buoy you up as you figure out what you're running towards.
That's great. That's great advice. One other thing before we wrap up, can you tell the listeners about your book? Can you also tell them a little bit about your business and how they can find you? I'll put it on our website too.
Absolutely. So the book is called I'm Supposed to Be Doing This in an Adult Gap Year. And it really is the story of getting to burnout and the lessons I had to unlearn and relearn while in Oaxaca. And it's told through little vignettes. So it's a quick read to get through. And then my coaching company is Vamanos Executive Coaching. And I work with executives who are at that point in their life who are saying, is this what I'm really supposed to be doing? How do they up their leadership game to live and lead with confidence and clarity on who they want to be going forward. And so I absolutely adore working with that group of people to kind of help them get clarity on that. And in addition, as I mentioned, I have the retreat that I just ran and will be running again to kind of immerse back into the Oaxacan culture, if that's up people's alley.
I think we all want to know more about that. But thank you so much
for joining us. This is great.
It has been my pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The listeners, you can find us at AmericanMidsters.com.